Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
It could be direction of amalgamation or whatever. And welcome back to the NutriMedical Report. We have Harley Schlanger here. And big news, what's going on in Italy. We also have some other discussion points to talk about Iran and North Korea, etc. But let's start off with Italy. This is a big deal, isn't it? What's going on?
I'd like to start by simply saying that what's going on in Iran and North Korea is so volatile and up and down day to day that it's hard to really get a good picture except from the higher standpoint. Now, that's why it's worth starting with Italy, because right. What happened in Italy was that 2 months ago there was a vote, and it was the same kind of vote that happened that elected Trump, that passed Brexit for the United Kingdom, that led to the demise of the major parties in France and Germany. In Italy, all the major parties of 10 years ago are gone. The only one who's still around is Berlusconi, and he's trying to cling on as a third party to the two parties that are now forming the government. But they got the go-ahead this week. This is the Five-Star Movement, which is a real amalgamation, and it's hard to know what they really want. But the Northern League, I know some of the leaders of the Northern League. I've met them at events. They're very serious people. They originally were calling for the north of Italy to secede from the Italian state because of the problems in the south. And now they realize that the problems in the south were caused largely by European policies, going back before the EU, going back to the end of World War II. And so they are putting forward a program with their partners, the Five Star Movement, which includes two major planks of what you and I have been talking about for years, Glass-Steagall and a national credit policy. Now, what's important about this is the EU Constitution forbids Glass-Steagall. The EU Constitution says that any bank in Europe should be a universal bank, and there'll be no protection for dividing up between commercial banks and investment banks. Well, that's a failed system.
Well, that's a speculative system you talked about before, isn't it? Where any money's deposits become a pool of money to be used in speculation by the banks, right?
Yeah. And it's led to a collapse of the Italian banking system. Three of the five largest banks in Italy are on life support. So six of the 10 smaller regional banks have been swallowed up by the bigger banks. So people can't get credit in their hometown. They can't get money for small business, for manufacturing, for the real economy. So the vote in Italy was a vote against the European Union, against the euro, and against the bureaucrats in Brussels who have dictated the national governments that those governments no longer can represent the interests of their people. They have to represent the interests of so-called Europe. And the Italians said, no, we're not going to do that. So this new government's coming in with a commitment to Glass-Steagall, a commitment to funding infrastructure through national credit, and you remember we've discussed this before, when Italy was hit with a catastrophe, a very bad earthquake, the EU told them they cannot spend money to restore the electric power stations because they're already over, they've already overspent. And they said, well, what are we supposed to do? We have people with no power living in freezing mountains. And the EU said, well, that's your problem. So in Italy, there's a rebellion. Now, Italy is one of a number of countries that has experienced this, but it looks as though they may actually go ahead at some point with a referendum on the euro. Now, this is why the German banks, the British banks, the Brussels bureaucrats are completely hysterical, because Italy could open the door for the demise of the European Union as we know it, which would be good for virtually every state in Europe, which has had its sovereignty taken away by the bureaucrats of Brussels. So this is something that I don't think anybody in the United States has an inkling of. The U.S. view of Italy is that it's always in a political crisis, it's a crazy country. But you know, Italy was one of the first nations to develop an aerospace sector. They had a number of top scientists who were on the cutting edge of supersonic flight. They have in northern Italy very fine machine tool sector, and I think they're the third largest economy in Europe. So if Italy breaks from the EU, then it means Greece will follow, possibly Spain, and the EU won't exist. So there's an enormous debate going on in Brussels. Should they take a hard line with Italy and maybe force them out? Or should they try and coax them back in without giving them anything that they want? And I don't think it's going to work. I think the Italians are looking at a whole new path.
Well, they have to. We know that one thing that the Chinese have done, which is to study Western economic systems, like the Hamiltonian system you mentioned before, and the Institute, in 2008-09, they've spent a lot of money on infrastructure, maybe too much. In fact, there's been a lot of debt developed because of that, but they built, I think, what is it, 25,000 miles of high-speed rail, lots of new buildings, unfortunately, cities that nobody's living in yet. But they built a lot of stuff. And what we did is we actually allowed the speculative banking system to just make the banks bigger. And it's like today saying, well, we lost half our pigs, so we're going to make the pigs we have twice as fat. It didn't fix the banking system. In fact, that movie, The Big Short, talked about this and had about a 4 or 5 minute rant near the end of the movie a few years ago. And what they did was they didn't fix anything. The same speculative systems that are ready to blow up the world economy are literally ticking forward to a disaster, aren't they?
Well, there was a bill that actually passed the Congress the other day, which was not too bad. It was wrongly reported as a deregulation bill attacking Dodd-Frank. What it actually did was attack Dodd-Frank in a good way, because what Dodd-Frank did was apply certain regulatory requirements to all banks.
Right.
Now, the large banks could comply with that because they have teams of lawyers, they have accounting teams, and so on. But the regional banks, the local banks, couldn't comply with it. And what was done with Trump's support and fortunately some Democrats joined some Republicans in this, was to exempt banks with less than $250 billion in deposits from these rules, which is most of the banks in the United States. So what this means is they're not going to have to waste money complying with regulations that don't really apply to them. Those regulations are gone now. And so this is a step towards sanity. What really should be done now is, and Trump's got to start paying attention to this, he's got to go with Glass-Steagall, because the too big to fail banks are going to continue to find ways to squeeze every drop of liquidity they can.
What about the people around him, like Mnuchin? Are they pro-Glass-Steagall? Because I know, I have a feeling you guys have a backdoor to get information through to Trump. But there's a lot of filters. There's the Kelly filter, there's the Mnuchin filter. There's a lot of people that are globalists, we call right side of the conservative, fake conservative groups around Trump. And I'm worried that he's not getting the full deal. I know he knows better. He talked about this in the past, how to get rid of the U.S. debt by getting away from the Federal Reserve System, which is what, the, in a sense, they're trying to get away with from the euro in Italy. But, well, you know, who are the people that are filtering him to prevent him from moving forward on this?
I think rather than filtering them, the proper term is that there is a wall that's been constructed, but it's not on the border. It's between the Trump supporters and Trump.
Exactly.
And this is a wall that was put up initially by Gary Cohn and Mnuchin. You've got some other people involved. I'll give you an example. On China trade, you and I have discussed this, and one of the hardliners on China is this guy, Peter Navarro, who wrote a book called Death by China, which caught Trump's attention. And Trump was somewhat taken by him, and he was included in the talks. But Navarro was one of the people who advocated for Stefan Helper, who turns out to be an FBI plant.
He's a really bad guy. We've talked about Stefan Helper. I talked to Scott Adams of Rich State Talk Radio this morning for an hour about guys like Stefan Helper. A very bad guy, isn't he?
Yeah, and Navarro was advocating.
Wow. These names you drop here, wow, these are important, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Back in a moment. Stay tuned. So you want to mention that name, Halpern. And I'm probably going to get Scott Adams on, who has his own show over and is one of the main managers over at Red State Talk Radio. But you mentioned the same guy, this bad guy, Halpern. People have to understand what's going on is that a lot of these deep state people keep popping up, don't they?
Halpern goes back to George H.W. Bush when he was the head of the CIA.
Right.
You know, it's kind of funny to me when Republicans rant and rave about Putin having been in the KGB. Well, George H.W. Bush was head of the CIA, and before that, he was a CIA operative involved in the Bay of Pigs and things of that sort. But Halpern goes back to an operation that was done against Ronald Reagan by George H.W. Bush. And only when Bush was brought in by Reagan as vice president was Halpern allowed to serve in the Reagan administration. But he was the one who worked with the CIA to steal the briefing books of Jimmy Carter and provide them to Reagan, which you may remember, that was the original Spygate. That was called Spygate back in 1980. And Halpern then went on to a career in, supposedly, in academia. But he's an MI6 agent. He's very close friends with Sir Richard Dearlove, who is the man who provided the phony dossier on Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. Dearlove is also the protector. Dearlove is a former head of MI6. He's the protector of Christopher Steele. And it was through Dearlove that Steele was directed to the FBI, which led to the FBI opening the original investigation into Trump starting in July 31st, 2016.
Right.
Now, I just wrote an article, Bill, pulling all this together. So if you give me a minute, I'll just identify these three characters who we're now hearing about as the infiltrator.
Right.
Now, it wasn't so much an infiltrator. It was a typical FBI sting operation, an entrapment. The first one was this guy, Mifsud, who supposedly convinced George Papadopoulos that he was a Russian with ties to the Kremlin, when in fact he was a diplomat from Malta who was very close to MI6. And Mifsud met with Papadopoulos and said to him, "The Russians have the dirt on Hillary. If you want, I can introduce you to people in Russia that will give that to you." And this set off Papadopoulos, who was a nobody, who for some reason ended up on Trump's staff. And Papadopoulos kept telling them, "I can set up meetings with Putin." And they kept saying, "Yeah, sure, go away. Go do your job." But Papadopoulos then went to a very fancy tavern in East London, got drunk, and just happened to be sitting next to the Australian High Commissioner to the United Kingdom.
Yeah, sure just happened, right? You know, it was all set up.
And this guy's name is Alexander Downer. He's the second of these three operatives. Downer is also very close to MI6.
Right, it's probably part of Five Eyes, right, where these agencies spy on other agencies to avoid national laws, right?
Exactly. Now, Downer got out of the inebriated Papadopoulos the story that there are thousands of emails that the Russians hacked. And so Downer reported that to a former British ambassador to Moscow named Wood, who then briefed John McCain and then also briefed Brennan and Comey. And so now you have the story that someone supposedly a Trump insider is bragging about how the Russians are going to give them dirt on Hillary Clinton. Now, the third person then is Halper, who shows up at the end of July. Halper is at a conference that he and Richard Dearlove sponsored at Cambridge University that invited as their main speaker Carter Page, another low-level operative in the Trump campaign. Page was later brought in by Halper, but then Halper contacted Papadopoulos. And on September 1st, 2016, he offered Papadopoulos $3,000 and an all-expenses-paid trip to London, where he said he would introduce him to some Russians. And, of course, the nitwit Papadopoulos went.
Yeah.
And so now you have these two guys, Carter Page and Papadopoulos, who the FBI are told are looking for the Russian dirt on Hillary. So who was the one who offered the Russian dirt on Hillary? It was the FBI, the CIA, and MI6. And then once the Trump operatives fell for it, they became targets of investigation. The FBI went to the FISA court and got a warrant against Carter Page. Mueller brought in Papadopoulos and slapped him around a little bit, and Papadopoulos pled guilty to lying to the FBI. And this is how the Mueller operation was working. It was a setup from the start, exactly as LaRouche had said when we saw Trump, after winning the election, immediately become a target of the deep state in the United States. Now, the other person who's pulling the strings on this, so these are three people who were basically being run by British intelligence and by John Brennan. Because Brennan was the one who was initially contacted by the British in the spring of 2016 by Robert Hannigan, who was the head of British Signals Intelligence, the GCHQ. They claimed they had been picking up cyber signals that the Russians were planning to intervene in the U.S. election. Brennan also got a report from an Estonian intelligence operative that there was evidence that the Russians were laundering money through Estonia to Trump. Turns out to be a complete lie. There's never a penny that went through an Estonian bank from a Russian oligarch to Trump. But Brennan took the Estonian report and the GCHQ report and set up his own task force with Clapper to compile evidence, which they then took to Comey. And it's beginning to look more and more like FBI Director Comey was a simpleton who was played by these guys, just as he was played by Hillary Clinton. And Comey may be more stupid than evil, but Brennan and Clapper are evil. Clapper was
these guys actually were part of the generation of these dossiers and everything, weren't they?
They generated them, they spread the word on it, and then they attributed it to Trump.
Right.
Clapper said, there's a difference between infiltration and spying, you can't say spying. And then he said, well, maybe it was spying, but if so, it was for a good reason. The Washington Post, in covering this, at first said there was no infiltration, no spy. Then they said, yes, there was infiltration and spying, but it was to protect the United States from Russian interference. And then they had a columnist who said this wasn't against Trump, it was to protect Trump.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, they lie to your face and then they try to make it look good. They don't even dress it up properly so that, as I say, when you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. It's ridiculous.
Well, and Trump said, if I need being protected, I'm not going to go to the FBI. And then immediately Brennan said, this is why you're a disgrace to your nation. You're destroying your nation's intelligence services. Now, I thought...
That's so ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, these guys need to be in leg irons. They need to get no daytime passes to yard time, no internet, and no book tours. How's that?
And no jobs.
Yeah, amazing. That we should be making closer alliances with Russia. Russiagate actually puts the world in danger, because if we had an alliance with Putin, and again, remember, it's not an alliance, it's like a dialogue. There's a lot of hardline chauvinists in Russia that want to just really get militarily tough on their former satellite countries and actually reemerge the Soviet Union. And a dialogue with Russia would not only reindustrialize it, but also allow us to kind of deal with the playoff against China and in China, who gave $400,000 of gifts, which violate the UN ban on giving gifts to North Korea. And Xi kind of like thumbed his nose up at America and the West, saying, you know, to hell with you, I'm going to give these gifts to Kim. And he probably told Kim, you don't have to listen to America, thinking somehow that Xi is going to get himself protected against sanctions against their four big banks that have been laundering money and doing illegal things. But also, if Russia was on side, it would be much harder for China and North Korea to get away with this stuff. So we literally cut our nose off to spite our face by allowing this Russiagate media hype and this uber-leftist maniacs saying everything's Russiagate, when in fact, if we had a dialogue, it would make it much easier for Trump to deal with China and North Korea, wouldn't it?
Well, I disagree with your analysis on China, because I happen to know that Trump is very pleased with the working relationship he has with Xi.
Well, no, let me counter that just a bit, and I have to do that right now. There's a couple things that Xi is doing on a positive side, but there's also some negative ones. Giving $400,000 of money and also doing ship-to-ship transfers of coal and oil is a violation of the United States and the UN agreement, and so Xi does some things right and does things wrong. Just like in Asia, we see this with Kim. He wants us to let, you know, maybe he'll destroy a couple nukes and we'll give him some more money. Xi has to start playing the ball game right. And he's playing part of the game right, you know, but he's not doing all of it. And I see a potential for this to blow up in a trade war, because if they don't come to an agreement with North Korea, China's going to be in serious trouble. Their banks and their trade with America and the West is going to be in a big conflict. And I know that Trump is always very apologetic and ready to negotiate, because he's a master negotiator, but Xi is not there yet. He's actually doing some good things and some bad things. He's doing both.
Well, my view is different, and I think
well,
I
well, these are facts. I mean, these are not open well,
these,
to
no,
opinion.
These are not facts.
They are, actually. Let me say this.
When you
give $400,000 of silk and gold and other jewels and things to Kim, and you allow ship-to-ship oil and coal transfers, that's not okay. And that's part of the reason why the Kim regime is hanging on, and probably why they're backwalking the idea of getting rid of their nukes. It's
no,
not
they're
optional.
They're not backwalking that. Trump and Kim had some communications today. They're talking about maybe even having the June 12th summit after all. But let me tell you what I know about what the Chinese are doing.
Right.
There are certain parts of the sanctions which the Chinese are not accepting, because they say the sanctions policies are illegal. That the sanctions policies, for example, the sanctions that Bush implemented against Iraq killed 500,000 children by denying medication. Now, the fact that the sanctions were passed as a law by the United States doesn't mean that if another country violates it, it's bad. Other countries don't agree with some of these policies that are coming from the U.S. Congress, for example, sanctions against Russia. So what the Chinese have said is that they have clamped down on North Korea, as Trump has said they have. Trump has praised Xi for the role he's played at bringing Kim to the table. Now, the other thing, Bill, is that it's not just a problem with North Korea. There is a problem with North Korea. It's a police state. It's a military dictatorship.
Right.
It's a very poor country. And you're going to have people in North Korea who are going to say, we're not going to surrender our sovereignty after being in Libya and elsewhere.
Well, especially the generals. That's why when they talk about Kim leaving and the danger of a military coup, it's quite possible, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, that's why the other part of the problem is the neocons in the Trump administration. And for people who are trying to look at the North Korea situation as, did China screw it up? Did North Korea screw it up? Did Trump screw it up? No, it was screwed up by people like Bolton, people like Pence, who played into the hands of the hardliners in North Korea. Because there are some of the generals in North Korea who are saying to Kim, you're going to end up like Gaddafi if you do this deal.
And well, yeah, I'm mentioning that the Libyan deal was a really stupid move. I mean, really, Pence did not show he is really geopolitically intelligent when he made that statement. That was in 2003, the weapons were given over to the United States. In 2011, Gaddafi's killed in the back of a truck with a steel rod shoved beside him.
Now, let me tell you the other part of this. Exactly. The other part of this is that the president of South Korea said that the possibility for renewing these talks is real. And he brought up the question of what Pence said to Trump. And Trump really can't defend it because Trump actually did scold Bolton, as you may remember. But here's the other thing to think about. Pompeo, who I really didn't think too much of before, has played a very positive role. And Pompeo was completely incensed at what Bolton and Pence did. And Pompeo went to General Mattis, the defense secretary, and said, look, you've got to work with me on this because we're going to screw this thing up and we're going to end up in a war over there.
Right.
So it's not just a question of what Xi is doing or what the North Koreans are doing. It's an intricately woven, complex, diplomatic imbroglio which we're trying to resolve. And the president has made some very good initiatives. If you read, even if you read his letter canceling the summit, it's almost apologetic.
It's apologetic. But one of the things people should understand, you'll understand this,
is still in a good way.
I know it's a good way, but here's my point, is that in Asia, you can't lose face. In fact, if you lose face, you actually could be killed. And so if Kim doesn't handle this properly, even if he does denuclearize, whether it's in phases or whatever, he could be killed by his own people. So he doesn't just have a danger of America and the West. He has a danger of his own generals and people that figure their lives on the line, too. So if he makes the wrong deal, that's why I mentioned here with John W. Spring, we have to publicly state this. We're not going to have a war crimes tribunal or send in Delta Force to kill him or his generals, and that we're going to take that off the table because they can promise all kinds of money through Pompeo and all kinds. You're going to get wealthy from these strategic minerals we're going to pull out of your coal and so on. No. The real issue is they don't want the Libyan thing to be repeated. And that's the real issue. We haven't talked about that. They may talk about how rich they're going to make them. It's no point in being rich if you're in hell. Okay, you're dead. Right?
Here's the other point. The U.S. has been the rogue nation in the last two decades, especially under Bush and Obama.
Of course.
Much of the world is looking at the United States and saying, what's wrong with them? And they're looking at Trump, and they're seeing Trump going one way, then the next way. Now, there are people in Europe who were sympathetic when Trump said no more regime change wars. They were saying, that's good. And that was Tillerson's policy. That was also what Pompeo said. But that's not what Bolton says.
Bolton wants a military strike. Now, the reality is a military strike and with 18,000 tube rockets, we'll probably kill up to 10 million people in Seoul and maybe a lot of our soldiers. And very likely they'll kill all the people in the prison as well, about a quarter million plus just in Pyongyang alone. So massive death and a very grave danger that China will get themselves ensconced in the middle of it because they said they will interfere if we try to do a regime change in North Korea. So we'll be in an immediate nuclear war with China. That's a fact. And Japan's armed to the eyeballs and they're ready to fire off in seconds in China. And we're going to see destruction of not only Japanese but Chinese cities very quickly. The whole place will become a thermonuclear wasteland really fast.
Let me give you something positive on this. There's a conference that took place the last couple of days in St. Petersburg, Russia. And at that conference, Prime Minister Abe of Japan promised Putin that he would get a peace treaty done between Russia and Japan, which had not happened yet to end World War III.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, they're still disputing some islands, aren't they, between eastern Russia and Japan, aren't they?
You're right.
The Kuril Islands, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, that peace treaty needs to be signed. That would be good. Have a collaboration between Russia and Japan. That would help a lot. But we need to stop the Russiagate, too, in order to be able to get things back on track. Welcome back, and so please continue, Harley.
Well, I think one of the themes that we've been discussing tonight is change coming from unexpected places. The cancellation of the summit with North Korea was not entirely unexpected. Remember, Trump said a week ago it may not take place. So some of these things, you know, you can make good guesses, but what everybody's ignoring is the undercurrent in Europe of nationalism. And I don't mean right-wing xenophobic nationalism. I mean people who are saying, why can't our country act to do things for our people?
Right.
And that's the normal impulse. That was the impulse that elected Trump. You know, the idea, the choice was between Hillary Clinton telling you what's good for you. You know, take your castor oil, kids, or we'll put you to bed without your supper.
Right.
As opposed to a president who's saying, let's figure out how to get credit to you so you can figure out how to make some money. So what's happening worldwide is an ongoing rebellion, what Mr. LaRouche calls a long arc of insurgency against establishments, established politicians, established parties, and established institutions. Now, one of the most important of these institutions in Europe is Deutsche Bank, which is technically a bankrupt bank, just as Citibank and Bank of America and Wells Fargo, if they were put through honest accounting practices, they'd have to be put into bankruptcy. Now, Deutsche Bank has over $42 trillion in derivative obligations on their books. It used to be $66 trillion, but they've started to whittle it down. Now, how are they whittling it down? They're just writing it off because they know it's worthless. And as a result, their profits have gone down and their stock has fallen to about $10 a share. So they had a coup in the last month. The CEO of the bank, John Cryan, who's British, who moved the headquarters to London, he was fired. The chairman of the board of directors was fired. And they brought in someone who's not in the trading division, but someone who is involved in retail sales division of Deutsche Bank. And what he said is that we're going back to our old business proposal of funding those enterprises in local communities which produce jobs and wealth. Now, this is good for Germany. It's good for Deutsche Bank. It's terrible for the Federal Reserve, for the European Central Bank, for the Bank of England, because it means they're going to say, we're no longer going to engage in your speculative bubble.
Right.
And if you start having money pulled out of that bubble is going to pop. And so they're watching what's happening in Germany with alarm. They're watching Italy with even more alarm. Suppose the Germans went down and talked to the Italians and said, okay, look, we'll give you a certain amount of autonomy. We'll write off some of your debt. We'll reorganize it and extend it for a number of years, and then we'll help you fund the enterprises that grow in Italy. The European Union would crack in a minute.
Right.
And so there are really fundamental changes that are taking place in the world. And in the United States, we're missing a lot of it because we're so caught up in the soap opera of Russiagate. Now, the good thing about Russiagate is that I think the tide has turned. People are now looking at Mueller as a hitman. They're looking at the FBI as a bunch of bumbling, incompetent creeps acting on behalf of special interests. The CIA, unfortunately, the good people in the CIA are being brought down by the horrible people who were at the top, who were the old Bush and Obama people. But the next phase of this is going to be to bring Brennan up for charges, Clapper up for charges, and if either of them start singing, it's going to mean Obama's going to go up for charges too, because the idea that Obama didn't know that this was going on is a complete fraud.
Right. Now, the thing is, if this doesn't happen, it's like the scenario at the end of the 4 or 5 minute rant at the end of the movie on The Big Short. America's doomed, because if we don't put Glass-Steagall in, if we don't separate the speculative banking, etc., if we don't more shore things up so we actually build infrastructure, not just more massive debt, America and the world economy is doomed, isn't it? And there's a time window, too, that has to happen. I mean, it's not just America. This is interlocked over the whole world. It's like every country is linked to it.
Well, and let's look at one other link, which I think is important for what you and I were talking about earlier, because I think in the broad principle we agree. Trump understands, as does Xi Jinping, that the U.S. and China need each other. And when some of these anti-China trade hawks jumped in, like Navarro in particular, and sabotaged the talks, Trump wants to have a tough position with China for good reason. But he doesn't want the talks to fail.
And right. He just wants hard negotiations, is what he wants.
Yeah, and people like Bolton and Navarro want them to fail.
Right.
So
that's part of their plan. I mean, the plan is to maintain the dialectic of opposition and conflict. Yeah. That's their whole modus, isn't it?
And that's why Trump made this deal to help this Chinese phone company. That's why Trump continued the discussion with a guy named Liu He, spelled H-E is his last name. He's the top economist of China, and he brought with him to Washington this time the leading expert in China on shadow banking, who sat down with members of the Congressional, the House Finance Committee, and showed them how the U.S. was destroying its economy by allowing the shadow banking sector as an unregulated sector to function. Apparently, people left this meeting with their heads buzzing, because the only other person who'd ever told them that was Lyndon LaRouche.
Right.
And the Chinese were saying, look, we have the same problem. We had to bring this under control in China. We're still working on it, because we have some Chinese who think that their future is in the speculative markets of Europe and the United States, and we're not going to allow that. They also brought in an expert from Iceland who talked about how the Icelandic banking crisis was triggered by speculation, and how Iceland now has a healthy economy because they jailed the bankers.
Right.
So there's a very healthy dialogue which goes up and down. One day Trump is saying it looks hopeful, the next day he's saying we're not going to get a deal done. But there's a negotiation process. I think the same thing is true with North Korea. I think the same thing will be true with Iran. The problem is that the hardline ideologues on the left and the right, as you pointed out, don't want agreements. They're dependent on these confrontations, not just for their reputation, but for their salaries, for their ability.
It's their version of globalism, too. It's their version of globalism, and who controls the actual generation of money and contracts? Because it's international trade contracts, and it's the generation of money that controls everyone. I mean, this goes back to ancient Babylon. Money and contracts make up, according to lawyers, 85% of the law. The other 15% are just regulations. People don't know that. Property rights, the generation of money and contracts make all the control of civilization. That's why all legislation involves this, doesn't it?
Well, and that's why institutions like the U.S. Federal Reserve have to be brought under control or dismantled. Because they function not on behalf of the American people. They're not a government institution.
Right.
They're a private banking institution that's there to make profits for bankers. And sometimes profits for bankers and profits for the whole economy coincide. In other times, like the last 20 years, the economy has been savaged for the ability of these bankers to make profits and prop up their worthless values on their books. And this is a moment of reckoning. And what we're seeing in Italy, what we're seeing in the negotiation process around the Belt and Road Initiative, around the EU, and in the Trump administration, it's a real fight. And I think people should have an appreciation for what Trump is up against. He's got enemies to the left, enemies to the right, enemies inside his administration. And
Plus, he has disinformation. In other words, he doesn't necessarily have all the facts to work on either, does he?
Exactly. And if he did have it, I think he'd make the right decisions. So if there's anyone out there who's talking to Trump, tell him to give me a call. I'll help him out.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, the fact is, in other words, what you're saying is a solution is easily not only justifiable but achievable, but the powers that be are actually trying to prevent even the idea of discussion of the acquisition of negotiations toward a solution. And so the people surrounding Trump are actually trying to prevent the idea of Trump actually, the art of a deal, working, don't they?
Some of them, that's right, some of them are.
Yeah, that's disheartening, but again, hopefully there'll be some more people that'll receive the, I call the apprentice effect, which you're fired, Bolton.
Well, there's a fight going on.
Yeah, I know there's a fight going on. I think it's going to get more intense here as you see Bolton and the other people bolting toward the idea of a preemptive strike. How's that? Because that's what they want, isn't it? Amazing discussion today, Arlie. We'll see you next Friday. Enjoy the holiday, even though you're away in Germany. It is our Memorial Day. We'll be back in a moment with Gary Richard Arnold. You don't want to miss it. We'll be back in a moment.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.